In a world where we're constantly bombarded with financial advice, Emma Edwards' Good With Money offers something refreshingly different. This isn't another book telling you to skip your morning latte or track every penny in color-coded spreadsheets. Instead, it's an exploration of what being good with money actually means, a journey into the psychology behind our financial behaviors and how to transform our relationship with money from the inside out. The book has resonated deeply with millennials and Gen Z, particularly women, who find its approach both validating and transformative. Even Reese Witherspoon included it in her book club selections, praising its ability to make financial wellness feel accessible rather than intimidating. What makes this book stand out is its recognition that financial wellness isn't about rigid rules or perfect habits. It's about understanding yourself and creating systems that work with your psychology, not against it.
Being good with money isn't about extreme frugality, wealth accumulation, or mathematical prowess. It's about understanding your unique relationship with money and taking an active role in your finances. The traditional markers we associate with financial success, never buying lunch out, having a certain amount in savings, or following strict budgeting systems, miss the point entirely. True financial wellness comes from feeling in control of your money rather than controlled by it. It means using money intentionally to support your best life while preparing for the future. This definition works regardless of income level, debt status, or past financial mistakes. You can be good with money while paying off debt, during financial hardship, or with any income level. This perspective shift is crucial because it moves us away from rigid, shame-based approaches to money management. Instead of focusing on arbitrary rules or numbers, we focus on awareness and intentionality. When we make this shift, we discover that being good with money isn't about restriction, it's about freedom. The beauty of this approach is that it works regardless of where you're starting from. In fact, developing these skills before earning higher income helps maximize your financial potential. Someone making $40,000 who understands their relationship with money will likely be in a better position than someone making $100,000 who doesn't. What would your life look like if you woke up tomorrow miraculously good with money? How would you feel? What would change? This visualization helps connect money to what truly matters in your life, beyond just numbers in an account.
Our financial behaviors don't exist in a vacuum. They're shaped by powerful cultural forces that have been influencing us since childhood. For many women, particularly those who grew up in the 90s and early 2000s, our attention was deliberately diverted from financial empowerment to appearance and consumption. While women were gaining legal financial autonomy, the patriarchy maintained control through a different mechanism, continuously shifting standards of femininity and manufacturing endless problems with purchasable solutions. The $946 billion wellness economy is just the latest iteration of this strategy, convincing us something's wrong with us, then selling the solution. This conditioning damaged both our self-worth and net worth. When our focus is directed toward weight, appearance, and fixing ourselves, our money naturally flows in that direction. Celebrity magazines revealing diet secrets, cellulite creams promising miracles, and expensive products that never deliver lasting results. This creates a vicious spending cycle on manufactured problems that keep us financially drained while distracting us from building real financial confidence. Beyond direct costs, these impossible standards affect our careers and earning potential. Women are paid less than men, yet expected to spend more maintaining impossible standards of appearance. The message is clear. Your value lies in how you look, not in your financial security or independence. This isn't about blaming individuals for falling prey to these forces. It's about recognizing the systemic nature of the problem so we can begin to break free. If you've spent more time wishing for a thigh gap than building savings, it's absolutely not your fault. But recognizing these influences is the first step toward taking back control. The media we consumed growing up warped our relationship with money in subtle yet powerful ways. From transformation porn, makeover shows, to financially implausible sitcoms, these narratives undermined women's financial empowerment while setting unrealistic expectations. Remember when shopping was considered a legitimate hobby?
As teenagers, many of us spent days at malls, channeling Cher from Clueless or Rachel from Friends, living out our media-inspired shopping fantasies. The women we admired in TV shows were typically portrayed as financially reckless or disengaged, like Lily from How I Met Your Mother with her secret credit cards, while Barney's extravagant purchases went unquestioned. These shows never depicted women navigating the gender pay gap, budgeting, or making financial plans. We never saw their financial priorities or how they actually afforded their lifestyles. Money in fictional media defies continuity. Sex in the City would have hit differently if Carrie's finances were remotely plausible. These shows gave us false understandings of what normal salaries could afford. The shopping-obsessed narrative continues to influence us, reinforcing the belief that retail therapy solves our problems. The stage was simply never set for us to develop healthy financial habits. Instead, we were shown a financially utopian world where money issues were rare and quickly resolved, with minimal evidence of how characters afforded daily coffees, bills, cocktails, and designer shoes. This disconnect between media portrayals and financial reality created a generation unprepared for the actual economics of adult life. When reality didn't match our expectations, when we couldn't afford the apartment, wardrobe, and lifestyle we'd been led to believe was standard, many of us turned to credit cards and loans to bridge the gap, setting ourselves up for financial struggles. Our generation faces unprecedented consumption messaging that's infiltrated every aspect of our lives. While temptations have always existed, today's culture of consumption is unlike anything before. We live in an age of immediacy, where thoughts become social media posts in seconds, products can be purchased instantly, and we expect immediate satisfaction in all things. This immediacy has made us dependent on having needs met instantly, requiring ever-increasing stimulation. The first internet transaction happened surprisingly early, in 1972, when Stanford and MIT students used ARPANET to arrange a marijuana purchase. True e-commerce began in 1994 with a CD purchase, followed by Amazon's launch as an online bookstore the next year. In less than 30 years, online shopping has transformed from something many people dismissed as ridiculous into an everyday necessity. While e-commerce offers convenience, it's eliminated the friction between us and consumption. Our homes are no longer safe havens from spending opportunities. Temptation follows us everywhere. Payment methods have evolved from checks and cash to facial recognition and one-click purchasing, reducing the pain of paying and creating psychological distance from our money. Buy now, pay later services have further transformed consumption patterns by exploiting our anchoring bias. When a $100 purchase is broken into four $25 payments, our brains anchor to the smaller amount, making larger purchases seem more affordable. Evidence shows retailers make more money when offering BNPL. Not only do more people complete purchases, but they spend more on average. This obsession with immediacy wasn't something we demanded. It was created before we knew it was possible, then trained into us. We've become uncomfortable with any delay between desire and fulfillment directly impacting our finances, as we've been unknowingly trained by systems designed to make us spend more money more often. Social media has fundamentally changed how we communicate, consume, and spend money. Through the concept of relative deprivation, we feel deprived when we see others having things we don't. Before social media, our reference groups were limited to our immediate communities, but now we're exposed to millions of people's lives, creating manufactured desires based on what others have. We look to people like us to determine what's acceptable financial behavior and copy it in our own decisions. When everyone around you makes similar financial mistakes, dangerous behavior goes unaddressed. Social media has widened our reference groups, making us measure our satisfaction against more people and adhere to new lifestyle benchmarks with hidden nuances. In 2013, Facebook acquired Instagram, and later that year, Instagram introduced sponsored posts. By 2015, the Facebook Pixel was born, allowing advertisers to track our interests and behaviors online, making advertising intensely personal. Studies estimate we see between 6,000 to 10,000 ads every day, with every online move becoming an opportunity to be sold something. Influencer culture has decentralized advertising, with the key change being that we're now sold to by people just like us, people we've developed parasocial relationships with. Whether through aspirational content showing glossy lifestyles or relatable content featuring affordable products, the outcome is the same. Our exposure to everything we can have has spiraled out of control. A U.S. study found 59% of people had been influenced to purchase something from an influencer's post, and 45% reported going into debt to buy something they saw on social media. E-commerce and social media have become increasingly integrated, eroding barriers between seeing something and buying it. When combined with the visceral connection of social media, our trust in those we follow, and our need to belong, it creates a concerning picture of how difficult it is to hold on to money in the modern world. Brands, companies, and marketers understand our brains better than we do, spending millions to create consumer desire that generates billions in return. Understanding these tactics helps us recognize them in real time and make more informed financial decisions rather than falling prey to marketing strategies. Instead of selling products based on their attributes, marketers sell outcomes and experiences. A candle isn't just a wax object. It's a moment of calm, an aesthetic home, or even a personality. Clothing isn't just fabric. It's confidence, power, or proximity to aspirational lives. Much of our consumption is driven by perceived gaps between how we feel and how we want to feel, between who we are and who we wish to be. Marketers excel at creating or widening these gaps, then positioning their products as solutions. Brands encourage perceived ownership to increase sales, from trying on clothes in fitting rooms to using augmented reality to visualize products in our homes. This triggers the endowment effect, creating a psychological connection between us and products. Repeated exposure through remarketing makes ads follow us across the internet, exploiting confirmation bias, our tendency to notice information that supports existing beliefs. Pricing strategies like anchoring guide our purchasing decisions. Stores like Zara strategically place expensive items at the front, then position similar but cheaper products throughout the store. Our minds are guided to these bargains because they seem like affordable ways to buy into the premium experience. Our brains also have a natural scarcity bias that makes us more likely to purchase when something appears in short supply or high demand. Online alerts showing 500 people viewing this item or only one seat left at this price exploit this tendency. Sales and discounts act as catalysts for our worst financial behaviors by triggering our loss aversion bias. Timed promotions with limited supply create urgency buying. I'd better get it now. Supplementary buying, I'll look for other discounted items. Duplicate buying, I'll get both and decide later. And false economies. If I'm saving $50 on this, I can get that too. The Diderot effect occurs when one purchase triggers a spiral of related spending. Named after a French philosopher who bought an elegant robe and then felt compelled to upgrade all his other possessions, this phenomenon happens when we feel pressure to maintain consistency with a new standard. Beyond external conditioning, we face another barrier to financial success: ourselves. Money itself is just currency, but it gains meaning through our emotional interactions with it. Our relationship with money is complex, starting from childhood. We develop money beliefs by age 6. Throughout life, we experience money in various ways that distort our behavior with it. This explains why logical budgeting systems often fail. They assume we're completely rational beings who make mathematically sensible decisions. Without addressing the emotional why behind financial challenges, logical solutions fall flat. Our brains aren't wired for proper money management. The primitive brain was designed to conserve energy, stay with the pack, and use resources immediately, not save for retirement. When threatened, our amygdala takes control, shutting down the rational prefrontal cortex and seeking immediate relief. Since most decisions happen subconsciously, money management becomes complicated. Our emotions function as an internal creative director, crafting stories about money and purchases that influence our behavior. These stories give meaning to our experiences, but often artificially inflate the value we expect from purchases. Our creative director builds narratives around who we are and what we buy, which activate during emotional states when our rational mind shuts down. Emotional spending follows five predictable stages. First comes attraction, when we notice something and our creative director begins crafting fantasies about it. Next is flirtation, where we see potential applications in our lives. Then euphoria hits. Dopamine peaks in anticipation of the purchase, not during ownership. Fourth comes doubt, as dopamine wears off and our expectations crumble against reality. Finally, truth arrives, the realization that the purchase didn't deliver the transformation we imagined. This pattern applies to countless purchases where we believe items will transform our lives, solve problems, or change who we are. Understanding this cycle helps us recognize when we're being led by our emotional brain rather than making rational decisions aligned with our true values. Our financial experiences shape our emotional relationship with money from an early age, with our creative director forming stories to help us make sense of it. Crucially, it's not what we experienced financially growing up, but how we perceived it that matters. Two people with identical financial backgrounds can develop completely different money behaviors based on the beliefs they formed. For some, growing up with financial scarcity creates a hoarding mentality, while others develop a spend it before it's gone belief. These early beliefs can create learned helplessness, where we feel powerless over money. Our financial window, our perspective on what's financially possible, often limits us, as we can't envision realities different from what we've experienced. Financial flashpoints are significant money-related events that leave lasting marks on our financial memory. These include experiences like divorce, redundancy, windfalls, or major financial conflicts. Our brains process these experiences by creating beliefs that guide our future decision-making, with our internal creative director using these memories as reference points. Our financial windows and flashpoints serve as reference points for our financial behaviors. Like sports fans watching the same game but interpreting it differently based on their team loyalty, our financial beliefs color how we perceive money situations. These beliefs form an undercurrent for our lives that, when colliding with external forces like advertising and social media, can create a dumpster fire for money management. Our financial factory settings interpret experiences through our unique windows and flashpoints, creating self-perpetuating cycles that reinforce our existing beliefs. When making financial decisions, complacency often takes over. I can spend it. I'll get another chance to save money next week. Every time we go over budget without disaster, we train our brains to continue the pattern. While we think we want more money or savings, we often don't address how our identity would change if our financial reality changed. Sometimes there's psychological comfort in sabotaging progress by maintaining our current financial state, especially if financial improvement would lead to scary life changes, like changing careers or moving cities. Being good with money means taking control of both finances and life itself. The first step is aligning feelings with behavior. When we feel in control of money, we act accordingly. Rather than prescribing specific percentages or rigid guidelines, the approach to financial wellness should be through identity, how we see ourselves in relation to money. The hardest part of becoming good with money is letting go of old identities we've found comfort in. While taking control isn't about restriction, it requires acknowledging that short-term happiness from impulsive spending doesn't last. You can't have both reckless spending and financial benefits, but the focus should be on what you're gaining rather than losing. Being good with money doesn't mean restriction. You can spend on anything, but with awareness and intentionality. Awareness means understanding your financial situation and consequences of purchases. Intentionality means aligning spending with values and goals. The difference between healthy and unhealthy financial behavior often lies in the backstory, not the purchase itself. Taking back control of finances starts with awareness. You can't change problems you don't know exist. This means opening your eyes to where money is going, examining bank balances, income, spending patterns, habits, behaviors, and emotions. A behavioral audit helps identify habits holding you back financially, like impulse purchases, abandoning budgets, avoiding looking at accounts, and emotional spending. We fail to stick to budgets because we design them from our fantasy self perspective, the rational, money-savvy person who only exists tomorrow. We create unrealistic plans while motivated, like scribbling crisis management budgets after spending blunders. This cycle is financially futile and poisons our mindset, creating financial anxiety and damaging our relationship with ourselves. To identify your financial behavior patterns, create a concentrated period of focus by stripping back spending to bare essentials for a few days or a week. Unlike toxic no-spend challenges that aim to punish or pursue perfection, a healthy no-spend challenge has the clear intention of gaining awareness. The progress doesn't happen during the no-spend period itself, but when you implement what you've learned about your behaviors. Let's build a money ecosystem that makes being good with money effortless. We'll use a top-down approach where your income sits in an imaginary cloud and you pull it down for different purposes according to a set routine. Before I got good with money, my paycheck would arrive and immediately start leaking away without direction. Top-down money management works like a flowchart. Money starts at the top, then flows into spend and keep categories. The spend side covers essentials like rent, bills, and groceries, plus discretionary spending. The keep side includes various savings categories and short-term reserved funds. We start by identifying essential expenses using expense streamlining, a game-changing technique that transforms variable expenses into standardized, predictable amounts. By condensing expenses into consistent payments, like setting aside a portion of each weekly paycheck for monthly rent, you make financial management dramatically simpler. After accounting for your streamlined expenses, subtract them from your total income to find your workable total, the powerful gap between what comes in and what goes out. This number represents your financial flexibility and determines what you can allocate to spending and saving. One of the biggest money management mistakes is neglecting saving until it's too late. Instead of promising to save whatever's left at month end, spoiler, there won't be anything, prioritize saving before allocating discretionary spending. Split your workable total between spend and keep channels, but be realistic. Overcommitting to saving can trigger sabotage behaviors. Compartmentalizing your money allows you to build anything you want into your budget, making financial management enjoyable rather than restrictive. Create specific spending compartments, like free spending money, personal care fund, dining out allocation, health and fitness budget, that reflect your values. Similarly, break down savings into targeted categories, emergency fund, holiday savings, first home fund, to build emotional connections that maintain motivation. The final step in building your financial ecosystem is ensuring it works with your human nature. Include permission, allowing yourself to feel the system works for you, margin for error, safety nets for when you overspend, autonomy, flexibility to act on your values, and ease, making it almost impossible to fail. Implement automatic transfers so saving becomes the default behavior. You don't need to stop buying things you want. You need to stop buying things you don't want. Values-based spending requires breaking down habitual spending patterns and rebuilding a financial perspective that honors who you really are rather than who you're trying to be. The difference between mindless and values-based purchases lies in motivation and intention. The same $200 jumpsuit can be an emotional band-aid purchased impulsively during a bad day, or a considered addition to your wardrobe after thoughtful evaluation. To identify your financial values, imagine a show and tell where you present items or experiences representing your best purchases. Examining why these things were significant reveals patterns in what truly adds value to your life. By analyzing what made these purchases meaningful, whether practical, emotional, or aspirational, you can extract specific words that form your financial values. After identifying your most cherished purchases, look for commonalities to understand where you're getting the most value for your money. True value isn't about getting the most for the least. It's about making decisions that pay lifestyle dividends long term. For me, words like ease, simplicity, safety, comfort, and beautiful appeared consistently in my best purchases. These become your financial values. Remember that values are deeply personal. What represents excellent value to you might seem wasteful to someone else. The goal is discovering how money can enrich your life in ways that feel right specifically to you. Transform your values into quantified expressions to create clearer purchase decisions. This creates a this or that framework that connects you to the consequences of your choices. When becoming good with money, you must redefine what money actually means in your life. Rather than viewing it through the lens of consumption habits, consider money as a resource for creating genuine well-being. The PERMA model from Positive Psychology offers a framework for this shift: positive emotions, engagement, relationships, meaning, and achievement. This holistic approach helps you move beyond the consumption-fueled happiness we've been conditioned to seek. Being good with money puts women in a position to earn more, keep more, and make their money work harder, countering the historical exclusion of women from financial conversations. While being good with money doesn't solve systemic inequities, it creates a foundation of financial confidence from which to achieve more. Having more money means having more choices and opportunities, but we must quantify what we're after rather than vaguely seeking enough. The problem with wanting enough money is that it's unquantifiable. Enough for what? Whether you want a luxurious city life or a quiet rural existence, you need to quantify your goals and work toward them. The word wealth often carries negative connotations of corruption and greed, but wealth can simply mean having choices. From buying premium groceries to taking time off work, choosing a fulfilling job over a high-paying one, or having resources to help others. To build wealth effectively, you must define what wealth means to you personally, grounded in your values rather than conventional status symbols. Time and money are inextricably linked. In a capitalist society, we spend much of our time earning money for basic needs, leaving little time for joy-creating activities. When time poor, we often seek quick hits of happiness through spending rather than time-intensive but fulfilling activities. Money can buy us time by reducing our reliance on working hours, opening opportunities for joy through freedom. Building wealth requires a foundation of good money habits. The journey starts with unpacking beliefs and behaviors, then squashing high-interest consumer debt before investing. You can't effectively grow wealth if your finances are still chaotic. Getting good with money is just the first step toward building wealth. Remember that wealth creation isn't about how much you earn, but how much you keep. Focus on increasing the gap between income and expenses through either earning more or spending less. This isn't an overnight transformation, but a muscle you'll develop over time. The key is finding balance, being connected enough to money that you care about it, but disconnected enough that you're not obsessing over every dollar. Be proud of your progress. You deserve to feel value from your money, trust yourself with larger amounts, decide where it goes, and use it to enjoy life.